We are live. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening live, this is John Johnson on Radio Edutalk. I am very pleased tonight to have Charlie Farley from the University of Edinburgh here to talk about 23 things. I don't think she's actually going to talk about 23 different things, but the course 23 things. Good evening, Stephanie.
Hi.
Hi. And I wonder maybe you could give us a wee bit of background on yourself, what you do, how you got there, perhaps, as a sort of introduction to the topic.
Sure. So I'm currently working in educational design and engagement, which is within the University of Edinburgh's Learning, Teaching and Web Services teams. I've actually only been working in EDE for about a year now, and I've the main purpose of my role there is actually working open education resources, so encouraging open education and the practice of open resources. So 23 things actually came as an additional project on top of my normal work, and it's been great.
Yeah.
It's just really, really taken off.
That just sounds like a great job description. What a lovely job to be involved in there.
It's pretty neat.
Open education, yeah, that sounds good. Did you come into that straight from study, or?
No, I've kind of come to it from a few different ways. So I'm actually from Australia, and I moved to the UK in 2008. And when I came here, I decided that I wanted a change of career and I wanted to move into libraries. So I persisted the University of St Andrews Library. I think I applied for 3 jobs, had 3 interviews, and the third time they sort of went, okay, all right, we'll take you on. Okay. From there, I moved to Edinburgh, and I was working at the University of Edinburgh Library for a couple of years, and I started taking on, I guess, sort of a social media role in the work there. Working with social media accounts and communications, writing on our blogs, and through that I've kind of segued into learning technology and open education. I've always had an interest in copyright. It's always been an interest of mine. And also playful learning, which is also, I think, a lot of where 23 things comes in for me.
I noticed your blog is called Playfulness and Literacies.
Yes.
Which is a great sounding title.
Thank you.
Especially that, well, playfulness sounds great fun, but the literacies hints at quite a lot of things. And the subtitle is Games, Learning, Copyright and Information Literacy. which just sounds like an interesting read, folks. We're going to ask Charlie to talk a wee bit about 23 things in a minute. If you're listening live and you want to join in on Twitter, either to tell us that I'm not speaking loud enough or to ask Charlie a question, you can use the hashtag edutalk, #EDUTALK, or mention myself at John Johnson or Charlie, who is at @SFarley_Charlie on Twitter. And there's also the hashtag 23 things. So maybe you could give us a sort of elevator pitch of what 23 things is, Charlie, to kick off.
Sure. Well, 23 things has a bit of history behind it. So it was originally run in a public library of Charlotte and Mecklenburg County in the USA in 2006. And it was run by a library there is a way of encouraging their staff to try out new technologies, particularly Web 2.0 tools, and encouraging their staff to give these things a try, to educate themselves in order to be able to feed that back into the service they're providing to their community. And this it's really picked up and taken off since then, so there have been a number of different iterations of 23 things. I saw 23 things for mobile phones, 23 things for CPD. 23 things has just been applied to just about anything that you can think of. It's just a really quick, easy format to dip in and try out new things and new tools.
And is it just because the first one was 23, then all the other ones, or is it the same 23 things?
Everybody everybody creates their own things to go into the 23 things, depending on the theme that they're focusing in on. So the theme that we're focusing in on with our 23 things is digital knowledge. So a lot of the things that we're looking at in our 23 things are around digital footprints, digital security, and how we present ourselves online.
And so we've got 23 things, and how does it work? It's been run in the University of Edinburgh, but it's open to anybody.
Absolutely anyone.
Yeah.
And anyone.
Is that general in the 23 things pattern? Or is that
it
specific?
Is. Yeah. 23 things generally are open and available for anybody to drop in and give it a try. So often you'll see, we're also basing our 23 things on, so the University of Oxford ran this for a couple of years, where it came to the attention of Mr. Highton, our Director of Learning, Teaching and Web Services. So she took part in their 23 things, and they ran this for a couple of years, including one that was on 23 things for research. So for improving your research and for promoting yourself as a researcher. What we are doing, as I said, is focusing in on digital things. So we've added our own types of things within that.
Yeah. And it's presented on the website here, and it says start anytime, do as much as you like.
Yes.
And maybe come back to that later on, because it's quite an interesting concept, and I just wonder what sort of engagement. But the sorts of activities you start off with, an introduction and blogging, and then there's two things a week, really.
Yes, so I'm running it over 12 weeks. So as you mentioned, you can do it at any time. You can invest as much time into it as you like. I set 12 weeks so that we'd be doing two things each week, except for I think it is week 11, where we're only doing one thing. Just as a way of not being overwhelmed. Just it's a small thing to try out each week. You don't need to set aside too much time, but if you do find it interesting, we're providing a lot of other resources that can be followed up on.
Yeah, I mean, I've been sort of following. I think I've managed. We're on week. What's this? This is week five. Just going
week
into week
five. Yes.
I think I've managed three or four activities during the week to do with a wee bit of depth, but they are very digestible, as opposed to some online courses where you lose your life really for the week. They're nice bite sized bits, I guess. A bit of reading and a bit of thinking to do.
Exactly.
And the responses, or the way people join in the courses, is via a blog.
That's right. So there are a couple of different ways to take part, but what we're encouraging people who really want to, I guess, sink their teeth into it, is to register a blog, to try out the thing, and then to reflect on that by writing a short blog piece on their experience with that thing. And by doing this, they'll be able to share that with other people in the community, and we can build up some experiences and some knowledge as a group.
And are you doing any face-to-face at all in the university?
Yes, so I'm running drop-in sessions at various campuses across the university throughout the 12 weeks. And we're also running online drop-in and hangout sessions. So last week we were looking at Twitter as one of our things. And we had a bonus thing. So we've also got bonus things spread throughout the 23 things. And the bonus thing last week was a Twitter chat. So we had our Twitter hashtag, people could follow along on the hashtag and just talk about what they've been doing in 23 things, ask any questions and share their experiences. This week we're looking at Collaborate Ultra and Google Hangouts. So these are online conferencing tools, really. And so tomorrow we'll be doing a Collaborate Ultra session where people can join the session and give that thing a try. We'll run through and do some training on Collaborate Ultra. And on Friday, we're having a Google Hangout session again, so people can join in and give it a try.
Yeah, and I mean, this is personal interest. I'm just Collaborate Ultra, I've not heard of particularly. Is that specific to the university or?
It's a tool that's used by universities, generally with Blackboard. Are you familiar with Blackboard at all?
No. Primary school background, so I know all of it, mostly from listening to American edu bloggers complaining about it, really, I suppose.
It's a virtual learning environment, so it's a space where students and teachers can go to online. They can share resources, so that's where they go to share their teaching materials. They've got all the teaching materials that they need for that class, all of the readings, links through to the web, and they can also have forums and submit assignments. So it really is a classroom online. And Collaborate Ultra is the video and conferencing tool to use within that space. So tutors can run a video conferencing session with their students, and they can share a screen, they can draw on a whiteboard, they can run polls. So there are a lot of really useful tools in there to help with an online class or an online learning experience.
Right. It sounds quite like Adobe Connect, and some of our listeners, if they're teachers, will be using that through Glow in Scotland. Certainly it sounds the same sort of tool where you get video on. You can share documents and things like that. Yeah, so I think we've got the idea. And how's it been going so far then?
Oh, it's been fantastic. It's been really lovely to see the number of people who have been participating. As I said, there are a few different ways to participate. So I actually have something. I've got a much larger number of people signing up to the mailing list. So receiving the emails each week, and I assume just dipping in and out of the content available on the website. And then we have quite a good number of people who have been signing up with their blogs, doing the things, and then sharing their blog posts on that as well, which has been fantastic to see.
Yeah, that's the bit I've been sort of familiar with, because you've got a nice reader built into your site. The site's 23things.edu.ac.uk, what you've got there is a community blog. There's a tab on the blog, yeah?
That's right. So the community blog, the second thing in the 23 things asks participants to create their own blog and to register that with us. When they register their blog, we add it to aggregate. And when they post a blog and tag that with the 23 things at uni, those specific blog posts come up in our community blog.
And I'm just skimming through, they turn over quite quickly. You've got quite a lot of people. But I'm interested in the folk who are on the mailing list. Do you get a sense of their activity, or are they just digesting in private? Or, you know, is there any feedback other than the blogs?
I have been receiving emails with a few questions coming in about particular things, or different ways that they might be able to blog. So there are a few people who are choosing to blog privately, and they've been sending me the details of their blogs, but not wanting to contribute to the aggregate.
Sure, yeah.
And we also have, so PebblePad is a University of Edinburgh sort of internal blogging system as well. So we have a few people who are using that.
Right, so there's a whole variety of people joining in, and I guess the sorts of things that you're discussing, and we'll maybe dig into one or two, are things about privacy and your digital footprint and things, and I suppose offering a choice in how you expose yourself is maybe a great idea for a course like that.
Exactly. What I really want people to be doing as part of this course is to consider how they are presenting themselves online and what information they're putting forward and in what way.
Yeah. So that's a big part of the course is this digital identity then? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's followed through on just about everything that we look at.
And I think certainly I'm guessing a lot of people in universities, and that's a question before that one. Do you think that Have you got a sense of the main audience, the main participants? Are most of them from the University of Edinburgh, or most of them outside? Or
actually, it's, of the people who are registering the blogs, I'm getting about half-half.
Right, okay.
So half internal, half external, and there's a real mixture of professions and backgrounds that are signing up there as well.
Right, so there's people out of academia and out of education who are signing up. Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely. And worldwide as well, I'll say. We've got the University of Adelaide Library has a number of their staff who have been signing up and giving this a go. So it's great to have some Australians on board.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, I think the course, from my point of view, we've got a lot of people in education who are starting to use Twitter for schools and classes across the country and other sort of forms of social media. And you sometimes get the feeling that some people are just jumping into it without much background, or feel that they have to jump in because other schools are doing it. And I wonder, do you get that sort of feeling in university education? And is this a resource for folk who are feeling like that, perhaps?
It's definitely, I have seen that happening as well. And I think one thing I like to emphasize when it comes to using these sorts of social media or Web 2.0 tools is that they are exactly that, they're tools. So they will work for some people and for some situations, but not for all. So as part of the 23 things, what we're asking people to do is to try out these tools and consider whether or not it does work for you and your purposes, because it may not. And as part of the reflective blog pieces, I'm really asking people to share if something has not worked for you and to tell us why, because quite often there will be a tool that is not going to be suitable, or it will even exclude a significant part of the people you're trying to reach. And I think it's very important that we're sharing that and making each other aware of how this can affect each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the really nice things about taking part in the course and sort of driving by a few of the blog posts is you get other points of view for things that you take for granted or don't, you know, personally speaking, you use, but you maybe haven't looked at from different angles. And we all get into our own groove on using, say, Twitter or something like that. It's really interesting to see the sort of alternative points of view. I wonder if it's worth maybe just describing one of the weeks in a wee bit more detail. Would you mind doing that? And I'm actually going to ask for week three, because that's the week I was too busy to look at. So I think that's quite a good one to think about, which was diversity and accessibility, not diversability. And you maybe could just talk through some of that, the two things. This was thing five and thing six.
Sure. Well, I'll go with thing five first, which was diversity. So this is actually a really broad topic to address, and what we're trying to do is to create some fairly bite-sized ways to try something out or to think of something in a new way. So the way that I have approached diversity for thing five was to actually look at emojis. So it's been really interesting in the last 2 years to see that both Apple and Facebook have been making efforts to release multicultural and a range of diverse emoji. And there have actually been quite varying responses to that. So as part of the thing of this week, for thing five, I provided just a brief background, two articles that look at, I'll just read out the titles. So one of the articles is How Apple's New Multicultural Emojis Are More Racist Than Before. And the other article is, yeah, Facebook Messenger's New Diverse Emoji Actually Matter. So we're looking at that from two different angles, two different responses. And then I'm asking that the thing to do that week is to play with Bitmojis. So Bitmoji is an app that allows you to create your own avatar. So you can go in there and change your height, your shape. You can do your hair color. You can dress yourself up. You can dress yourself down. And then you actually put that character into a range of some pretty fun little images and conversation starters that you can use there.
So is Bitmoji, is it designed as a tool to make you think about how you represent yourself, or is it a tool for actually creating these avatars?
for creating these avatars. It's designed to give you more choice. So it puts you in control of creating how you want to represent yourself in the emoji. It's not perfect. There are a lot of... it still only covers a certain range of people and sizes and shapes, but it's a step forward. It's an attempt. And I think it's a really interesting way to engage with diversity and think about the ways that we do present ourselves, often visually, in our online conversations.
And what sort of response have we had to that in the, you know, from the participants?
They've all been really quite positive, actually. I've been getting a lot of feedback that they found this to be quite a fun way of engaging with what is often a difficult topic. A lot of people in their blogs have been writing about it was something that they had not considered before, about how emojis were used and how some people may not have just considered how the colour of an emoji can be used to represent somebody in so many different ways.
Yeah, and then I think on the few occasions I do use these things, I tend to stick with the yellow, which just comes straight out of the box without much thought. But I do certainly notice that I teach in a primary school, and the children I teach are 9 till 11, and they are just full-on emoji writers. That they will fill a sentence, and if they're writing on a device, it's almost 50% emojis for some of them. So I guess it's a literacy we can't really ignore or miss it.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's becoming such an embedded part of online conversations now. And I actually, I've learned a lot from people's responses to this thing this week. And there was one post by, I think it was Lorna Campbell, who's also a colleague of mine. And she was writing about a girl who actually found that she didn't feel that she was represented. And she wanted to be able to see an emoji of a woman in a hijab. And what she did is she actually put together her case, and she took that right to Unicode, so right to the top of where all of these emojis come from, and she put her case forward to have this created at the highest level, and I thought that was just fantastic.
Yeah. And is it there? I mean, has she got it there yet, or?
I'm not sure. I'll need to go back and read the blog, but it was just. This is what I love about the blog post sharing of 23 things is just we all get to learn from each other.
Yeah, certainly, and. The sort of serendipitous meeting of people, even you know the small amount I've done is really interesting. One of the people who I was browsing through and I saw somebody had mentioned the fact that I'm using the same blog theme as they are for the same reasons, you know. And there's somebody else interested in the indie web, and that's the first person I've met in Scotland who has been involved in that. So that was quite exciting. And that was just clicking through one afternoon at random and reading a few different posts. I mean, you do go on. I mean, just make clear that some of the other resources you put in to the conversation about multiculturalism or... Mm-hmm. Are quite more heavyweight anti-racist material and discussions about racism and can computers be racist looks quite an interesting thing as well.
Yes,
and some training modules. So it's almost as if the attractiveness and ease of getting into this thing starts off with playing around with some emojis. And then deepens quite a lot.
Yes. So I've the idea is, as we were saying, just to start with as a light level. But if somebody is wanting to take that further, then as you're saying, I am providing additional resources and linking to other training that's provided in the university. So we have a diversity in the workplace training model, which is provided as an additional resource along with our thing 5 on diversity. As you're saying, the anti-racist bystander information and the can computers be racist article, which that was just such an excellent article. I couldn't not share that or ask people to read it. I thought it was fantastic.
And the other thing that you were doing at the same time, and I'm asking random questions at random times as they come to my head, you can understand, so that's why they're awkward. But I'm guessing the things go together, you know, you see a connection with the two things you do in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the next one, thing six, is accessibility.
Yes.
And I think there's probably an awful lot of people, and teachers especially, are pretty guilty of this, that they're making resources, is we don't think enough about the accessibility, especially now as we put things online and they have a bit of life, and we don't actually know who's going to be seeing them. So, again, you've got a series of tasks to go through to do with accessibility and checking things out. Do you want to maybe talk about that a wee bit, this thing?
Sure.
Six?
Yeah. As you're saying, what we're looking at is online, online access and online use throughout the 23 things. And I did want to bring up accessibility fairly early within the 23 things because it will apply to a number of the other things that we're doing later on. So when we're thinking about how we use technology and how we present information online, particularly as teachers, we do need to make sure that our students can access this. And there are a number of ways that we just may not realize are creating complications for our students to read, to access, to listen to, or even to just to download. So just having access and enough bandwidth to download resources and materials can be difficult at times. So what we did in this thing was I've got a series of stories of web users, which I'm asking people to read through and just consider how materials online can be difficult in various ways for people in so many different ways, from the size of fonts to underlining to bolding to using italics. We've also got contrast. So if you're using two colors that aren't clearly defined against each other, it can be really difficult to read. This also applies to just anybody, anywhere, because we are accessing and using online materials in a variety of places and times now. So if you're trying to read a web page and you're outside and you've got the glare of the sun coming down on your screen, if the color contrast on that is not terribly clear, you're also going to have difficulty reading that. So really, we're just asking people to think about the ways that they're presenting materials and themselves online.
Yeah, I think the bandwidth one, because we always tend to think maybe of accessibility as something that's for people who have got a problem of one sort or another. But your problem might not actually be yourself. It might be the device you're using or, as you say, the bandwidth. And school teachers can usually relate to that, because their bandwidth is, in general, never good. And you've generally got a lot of people on and all the rest of it, so you do want things to load quickly, and that's not something you immediately think of as, except, I mean, I don't think I thought of that really as accessibility until I started reading this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, it's not an accessibility issue for people who, you know, whose eyesight perhaps is bad. It's an accessibility because of bandwidth or area 11 or all sorts mm-hmm. of things. You know, you could have a postcode problem, but just because a fast internet connection hasn't reached your place of residence. So that certainly just makes me think a wee bit about how we expect, and again from a teacher's point of view, pupils to access things, and will they be able to, and maybe we've got to rethink our rich resources.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, is it going to be necessary to
yeah.
the learning, and do we need it in order to get our point across?
And certainly we've had many discussions about podcasting here, because we don't provide any transcripts on EduTalk at all.
Mm-hmm.
Basically because we're, you know, an amateur outfit and haven't got the resources. And I think sometimes you've just got to say, well, that's the best we can do, you know. And at the moment, we can't afford to get automatic translations, and certainly haven't got the time to type up.
I think that. It really comes down to being aware and to making the steps and the efforts that are available to us. I mean, as you're saying, not everybody has the ability or the time or the finance to be able to address each and every accessibility issue. But if we are aware of what steps can be made and to take those ones that are within our reach, I think we should be doing that.
So, I say you've got to week 6. I guess that's next week, which is a good week for me, certainly, because I'm on holiday, like many other teachers. And that, I think, would be a really interesting week for some of our school educators to dip into, because it's copyright, OERs and Creative Commons, which many of us are we'll gaily skip through thinking about, and that's going to be a really good one. But would it be possible to join in at the moment with the 23 things?
Anybody can start at any time, so you don't need to feel that you need to even start with week one. You can just go to the website, 23things.ed.ac.uk, ed.ac.uk, bad habit there, and just dip in and dip out. So try the things that you're interested in. If you want to register a blog, it's not too late to do that either. Register a blog and write a post about the thing that you've been doing. We'd love to hear from you.
That's one thing I have noticed, which sort of give me a start sometimes, is people are going in ahead of where I am, if you know what I mean. I've sort of been following along from the start, not doing that many of them, but, you know, dipping in and out every week or two, and you see one that's a way ahead. And I just wonder, this open, do anytime, you know, start anytime, do what you like, aspect of the course. When I saw that at first, it sort of made me go, I'm not that far on, I need to hurry up. But there's this permission to do anything and do as much as you like. And that's quite different from a lot of other online learning courses. And I wonder, is that being general in 23 things? In the different...
No, not really. A lot of the other 23 things that I've come across have been working to a schedule, and they've been focusing on doing a thing each week over a particular length of time. I specifically wanted to make this one really available to people who have busy lives. I have a busy life. I don't always have time to do these things at a set time each week. And I know that personally I quite like to just be able to go in at some point. I might get like 5 or 6 things done in one go. Uh-huh. And so for me, having that flexibility is really important. I just wanted to make sure that that was available for anybody else to come along and not feel that they couldn't participate because they couldn't do it right now. But you can participate at your own time, whenever you like, as much as you like.
Yeah, and I say that seems very different. You've designed it that way, and I wonder, is there any other courses you know of that are doing that sort of thing? And do you have a sense of what sort of difference does it make?
Well, I guess from my personal experience, I'm actually doing a master's in library and information studies at the moment with the Aberystwyth University. And I specifically chose to study with them because their degree is part-time over a number of years and it doesn't have any assignment deadlines. Mm-hmm. So you do the work when you can, you hand it in when it's ready, and then somebody grades it and gets back to you. There are also a number of MOOCs that are available online. I'm a huge fan of MOOCs. I participate in far too many of them than I have time for. And I again, I particularly enjoy the ones where I have the freedom to dip in and dip out, to access the information, to watch the videos, to participate in the forums at a time that suits me, when I've got that free 10 minutes or 20 minutes to go and have a go at it.
That sounds interesting. I guess my worry with these things is that if there's not a demand on you, that it's easy for me to drop out of things. I've dropped out of many MOOCs after the first week or two, you know, just, but I wonder, I'll be interested to see on week 12 of 23 things if I'm still involved or reading, because there isn't any pressure there.
There's no pressure, but there are rewards.
Oh, I didn't know there was rewards.
There are rewards.
Tell me more.
So anybody who registers a blog and blogs about each of the 23 things by the end of our 12 weeks will actually receive an open badge to say you have completed our 23 things for digital knowledge. We also have an additional reward for University of Edinburgh staff and students who did do this. They will go into the running to win an iPad.
Oh, that sounds very nice for
yes,
the Edinburgh folk.
Anybody else? We do have the open badges. So there is a reward there if you get all of the 23 things done.
Gosh, you need all 23 for a badge. I think I'll be a bit about, at the moment I'm running at about probably two-thirds or one-third of a badge.
I've also noticed that, that it also depends on how much time people are putting into their things. So some people are writing some excellent and amazing in-depth long blog posts, and other people are writing maybe 20 to 50 words about their thing. We have one student participating who has been just doing a chunk of things in each blog post. So she did, I think, things 1 to 4 in one blog post, and she's just done another couple of things in her latest blog post.
And you mentioned, well, I don't know if that student's a student, but you mentioned that in Edinburgh it's open to the student population as well.
Yes.
Yeah, and are you getting engagement there too, yeah?
We are. We're not getting as many students as we are staff, but this is a very busy time of year for students. So that's quite understandable. And I have a lot more students signed up on the mailing list than I do have registered with the blogs.
Right. I mean, those two things are interesting. Interesting, one, that a student would take any other sort of learning on in the middle seems pretty positive to me. But the idea that, you know, I would have imagined that the young would be more out posting in the open than they would be just sort of lurking on a mailing list. So that's quite an interesting notion, I think.
I've actually found that a lot of the university students that I work with are quite even more reluctant to put themselves out onto the open web than my peers.
Do you think that's maybe because they've had so many negative messages about being online in their education? You know, the sort of message we give of being careful. Do you think that's maybe been overdone, or?
I think it's a combination. It's a combination of being aware of more of the dangers. So as you're saying, they have been brought up with a lot of the dangers of having an online presence. But there's also the mixture of not yet having a professional presence online. So they don't have a body of work to present online. Really, all they would be putting online at this point generally is their personal self. So without that distinction of professional and personal, they can feel a little bit in the limelight.
Yeah, I suppose in that they've probably got networks of their own that they're using for social things. I guess to some extent the courses, this idea that you have a professional presence on the internet. I mean, one of the things that interested me was when the thing about Twitter, which I've been using for a number of years, I guess, and the two things you asked the reader, or two of the things, there's a few, was how to use social media to find jobs. And I guess at some point that's maybe crossed my mind, but I've always just thought of Twitter as something that I do, and it sort of crosses wee bits of my professional life and wee bits of my personal life. And I'm aware that I don't want to do anything that would stop me getting a job. But I wasn't aware that actually could get me one, which is quite interesting. Well, it could if I, you know, could type sentences without typos and didn't put lots of animated GIFs on the internet. But that seems really very positive, and that sort of thing might be very useful for students.
Mm-hmm. Twitter is a great tool for networking, for meeting. It's great to have access to other professionals in your field, to open up conversations with them, and also to show what you have to share in quite a nice little bite-sized way, kind of like our 23 things.
So I think we've covered not 23 things, but we've covered a few in detail. I think you've given a very good description of the course. I would hope that people listening, certainly from my sphere of primary or even secondary education, people would be interested to dip in or drive by. And as you say, they wouldn't even need to set up a blog and blog about it. You could just pick up one of these things and use it for 10, 15 minutes reading and another few minutes reflection as a very
Absolutely.
Useful tool for beginning to understand a wee bit more about sort of digital world and how it fits in with our professional lives.
We've got a range of really fun things coming up over the next few weeks. So as you were saying, next week we're looking at copyright and open educational resources, which is my heart. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm quite focused. But we'll also be looking at video, looking at YouTube and audio, podcasts and SoundCloud, how we can use that in various ways. I'm also really looking forward to we'll be doing a thing on geolocation tools and how these can be used in a variety of ways, particularly around teaching and learning. And thing 21, online games and learning tools.
Yeah, I mean, they just all look great. And I notice, again, from my colleague's point of view, thing 16 is in OneNote and Class Notebook, which is beginning to make a bit of impact on Scottish education, I think. In the school sector, so that looks another interesting one. Augmented and virtual reality, there's a bunch of folk starting to use Google Expeditions and things like that. I had my class spinning around on their seats and their feet the other day using Expeditions because we had a visit from Google to do that. So there just looks a huge pile of really cool stuff coming up. Yeah. So
great.
Will we call that a wrap, Sadly? There's anything else you want to
I'd share? Just really love to encourage anybody to go to the website, have a look around, and just dip in and out. Give it a try. Yeah. Try out new things. Have some fun with it.
Yeah. And we'll put the audio archive up over tomorrow or the next day, and there'll be a pile of links to Charlie's blog, Twitter account, the 23 things itself. So hopefully that will be a useful resource as well. So I'd just like to say thanks very much, Charlie, for coming on and spending some time in the evening having a wee talk about 23 things. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Okay. I'll say goodnight to any listeners. If you listen to the podcast, it may not be nighttime. Cheers.